All right, now we will start our final recording of the semester, and we're going to cover the structures of the female reproductive system. It is much more complex than the male system. That has an obvious reason to it. In addition to creating sex cells and hormones like the males do, they also have to carry the fetus. And so you have to have the structures for that. I would like your book to be up to page 1048, 1049 for most of these notes. These are like a cross-section and frontal view of the female anatomy to help you visualize all the relative position of the parts. Starting with the ovaries, they're the shape of an almond, but twice the size. And these are analogous to the testes in males. They're going to be the ones producing the sex hormones and sex cells. They contain many sac-like structures called ovarian follicles. And inside each of the ovarian follicles is an immature egg called the oocyte. It's O-O-C-Y-T-E. It's an interesting thought, but that you have the DNA that will become your children someday in you now. Males are constantly making new sperm cells. If they don't get used in a few days, they're going to be broken down. But for the female, these eggs are already there. When the egg matures, the release of it is called ovulation. It's a word I think most people have heard of before. But it's like near the surface of the ovary, it inflames like an overfull zit and pops, and out comes the egg. It's kind of gross. I shouldn't say that. All right, next. I mentioned previously they do produce estrogen and progesterone. On the next page, we're going to start the female duct system. We had a male duct system that the sperm cells travel through, and we'll have a female duct system that the eggs would travel through, starting with fallopian tubes. These are also known as uterine tubes in many books. They receive the ovulated egg. Now, you'll notice that the uterine tube doesn't completely wrap around the ovaries, but maybe halfway around. And they have those fimbriae, these little finger-like structures that kind of just move over the surface of the ovary, searching for the egg to be released. If you are to become pregnant, if you're going to fertilize the egg, it needs to happen in the first third of these tubes. So if you just look at the structure, which is about 4 inches long, just picture the first inch and a third or so, and that's where fertilization, where the sperm cell has to meet the egg. Now, the egg doesn't just roll down these like a BB rolling through a pipe. It takes about 4 days for the egg to roll down the fallopian or uterine tube. And like I said, the most important opportunity is in the first third of that tube. Because of the structure, as you look at it, some eggs are released, don't make it into the fallopian tube, and they are lost into no man's land in the peritoneal cavity. And again, it seems like a mistake in the development or the design of this, but because of that, there's this thing called pelvic inflammatory disease that can happen. Normally, I had you guys get out the computers and research this a little bit, but I'm just going to give you a brief overview of it. Because the fallopian tubes don't seal over the ovaries, a disease that is moving up the female reproductive tract can spread into the peritoneal cavity. And we've talked before about how you don't have much immunity up in there because really not supposed to be anything in the peritoneal cavity. But if a germ doesn't make it up there, and it grows pretty freely and it causes this pelvic inflammatory disease. The next structure we'll talk about is the uterus. If you look at page 1049, it looks like a solid structure. When you look at 1048, you see that it's hollow in the center. It does have a lumen, obviously. Its first bullet's located between the bladder and the rectum, and it is the site of fetal development. So the fertilized egg is going to implant in the wall of the uterus and start to develop there. About the size and shape of an upside-down pear, more food. The narrow opening at the bottom is called the cervix, and we'll talk about the cervix in just a minute, some of the troubles that happen there. I'd like you to look closely at page 1048 at the three layers of the uterus. You'll notice the outermost layer, the least interesting, is the perimetrium. Then you have myometrium, and you should hopefully remember that MYO as a prefix means muscle, and it is smooth muscle. when you go into labor contractions, it's going to be contractions of the myometrium that will be happening. But maybe the most important layer is the endometrium, the one facing the lumen. That's going to be the one that builds up with nutrients and blood vessels and all. And then if you don't have a fertilized egg arrive, then it sloughs off every 28 days, the menstrual cycle. The cervical cancer, I wrote that underneath, it's common cancer in women between the ages of 30 to 50, and risk factors include STDs, multiple pregnancies, having many sexual partners, and it is diagnosed by a Pap smear test. The biggest culprit in this is the HPV, the human papillomavirus. Having that virus increases your chances of cervical cancer many times, and there are vaccination shots for it that knock out many of the variety of HPVs. There's not a single shot that covers all of them, but you can reduce your chances. And that's for both males and females can both get that shot to reduce carrying that virus, the chances of it. The next structure is the vagina. It is a thin-walled tube about 3 to 3.5 inches in length. It extends from the cervix to the body exterior. It is also known as the birth canal. The fourth bullet, it receives the penis during intercourse. And in childhood, most of the opening of the vagina is covered by a thin mucosal membrane called the hymen. The hymen is usually torn during first intercourse and might have some bleeding from that. On the next page, we start discussion of the menstrual cycle. And it would be great if you have a book to open it to page 1064. Now, this is a very complicated chart, but I love it. What it shows you on the x-axis is days 1 through 28 of the menstrual cycle. And at any given day, if you draw a line vertically through this chart, you can see the various activities that are going on. Now, with the discs that accompanied this, the instructor resources, they split this chart into 5 different pieces. So you don't get the all-in-one. So that's why if you have a book, it'd be really great. Otherwise, I did open up, or I opened up one of the pictures and posted it to our book images. So menstrual cycle. First bullet says endometrium prepares to receive a fertilized egg each month. Now, just back to biology, if you think about it, you've got a fertilized egg and it goes through cell division several times, rolling down the fallopian tube. And when it gets into the uterus, it's still just a single cell that's gone through multiple divisions. So I guess it's multiple cells, but it's still a single structure. And no ability to take care of itself. So what it does, it implants in the wall of the endometrium that has tons of blood and nutrients for it to absorb while it starts to set up the placenta. So it's like a temporary setup each month that you're building up for hopefully a fertilized egg. If everything works right, fertilized egg should implant 7 days after ovulation. The menstrual cycle itself is controlled by rising and falling levels of estrogen and progesterone. On average, it's about 28 days, although for some women, it's as often as 20 days, and others, it happens only every 45 days. But the vast majority are right around 28 days. Now, what takes place in these three phases? Days 1 through 5, the functional layer of the endometrium is sloughing off. So if you do not receive a fertilized egg, you're going to break down that lining and as the first step of rebuilding it for the next month. So this is the menstrual flow. The bleeding can last from 3 to 5 days. And the average blood loss is anywhere from a quarter to half a cup of blood. In the next phase, again, if you look at the chart, you see a bunch of arrows starting to move up. You have rising estrogen levels, days 6 through 14. The endometrium starts to grow rapidly, building up a new lining. And at the end of this phase, you should have ovulation as your LH levels peak. And if you look at the chart, you'll see that LH really spikes right at about day 14, and that's when you should release the egg. Days 15 through 28, rising levels of progesterone cause the lining to increase its blood flow even more. That rising progesterone also causes the lining to secrete nutrients in preparation of an egg. So there's a big biological investment for this fertilized egg. A lot of the goodies that you've collected are going to be spent trying to get ready for it. If there's no fertilized egg, the progesterone levels drop, and that causes the blood vessel in the endometrium to kink, so the blood doesn't flow through it properly and the tissues die, and then you'll start with day one of the menstrual phase. On the next page, the hormones produced by the ovaries. The follicle cells produce the estrogen, and estrogen leads to the development of secondary sex characteristics. So when you're a young kid, your estrogen levels are quite low. But when you go into puberty, these estrogen levels rise and the secondary sex characteristics kick in, which we'll talk about in just a minute. The second ovarian hormone is progesterone, and progesterone is the one that really manages the body during pregnancy. Some people call it the pregnancy hormone. Secondary sex characteristics. Number one, enlargement of the accessory organs of the reproductive system. So fallopian tubes, uterus, vagina, and external genitalia. Number two, development of breasts. Number three, axillary and pubic hair. Number four, increased deposits of fat under the skin. This is an interesting one that sometimes athletes that are training, you know, 5 hours a day and have really, really low body fat percentages, they'll miss their menstrual cycle because the body measures that super low body fat percentage. And a lot of times, I know in swimming and gymnastics and sports like that, where it's really, really long training days, you might go months without a menstrual cycle because of the low body fat. Widening of hips and the onset of the menstrual cycle. One question that always comes up about it during this part of the course is how the birth control pill works, since we're talking about these hormones and such. I wrote it out there for you. The first bullet, the pill contains progestin and estrogen. So what's going to happen is you're going to take these artificially high levels, you're going to have artificially high levels of these hormones, and because they're high all the time, you don't secrete LH and FSH. Remember, those are the ones that are going to guide the development of the egg. So since you have artificially high levels of progestin and estrogen, you don't make the LH-FSH, and the egg doesn't develop, the pill failure rate is 0.3%, like a third of 1%. So it's not a perfect contraceptive, but it's pretty efficient.